Okay. One more class day before spring break, and one more section in chapter 4. Then we go to chapter 5. Integrals, integrals, integrals. Alright. Okay. So, let me make up a little kind of toy problem here. You can think of it as having a vaguely physics inspiration. Vaguely physical, really geometric, but... Okay. I've got this ellipse here. Imagine it's a little tube or track. And I've got a fixed little object here, and it's got some static electricity built up on it. Took away some of its electrons by rubbing it with something else that likes to grab electrons, and so it's got a positive charge. Now, imagine I have the thing I rubbed against it to take away some electrons over here. A negative thing. Imagine that one can move around, right? Negatively charged thing. Where is it going to want to go if it's stuck on that track? If you have a negatively charged thing, where does it want to go? Yeah, it wants to get as close as it can to the positive charge, right? So it's going to try and get as close as it can. It's going to want to go here. If it's a sphere, it's going to roll along to here, and it'll roll back and forth, and eventually friction will take away its kinetic energy, and it'll be stuck there at the position of lowest electrical potential energy. It's going to want to get as close as it can. Well, maybe I've got some more objects that I can rub together to make one positively statically charged and the other negatively charged. So maybe I put another positive charged thing on the track. If I have the negative one there, that might confuse things. So let's just put one thing on the track at a time. Right. So we can imagine that thing is still fixed. If I had a positively charged one, it's going to want to go about as far away as it can get, right? And the question is, how far away can it go? If we had a positively charged one, it's going to want to get away, right? Like charges repel, right? Okay. Now, how can you predict these positions, the closest point on the ellipse to a fixed point and the furthest point on the ellipse to a fixed point over here? How can you predict those? Well, that's what's called a constrained optimization problem. In this case, we're trying to minimize or maximize a distance. So there's some function. And we're usually interested in a case where it depends on more than one variable. So in this case, there's only two variables, but you could imagine there being more. And we'll do an example where there are three. Okay. But we have a constraint. In this case, the constraint is the equation of the ellipse. We're trying to we have a function that tells us something like distance to the fixed point, right? In this example, as we're trying to minimize or maximize. But then our constraint would be that we have to be on the ellipse. So there'd be some other function and we have to set that function equal to a constant to put us on the ellipse. Right? Now let me tell you the kind of the general principle for how to do this with formulas, right? And there's kind of there's some geometric approaches that work in very simple cases, but in general, we have a formulaic approach here, and that's Lagrange multipliers. So to solve constrained optimization problems, look for what you might call constrained critical points. What does that mean? Okay, so last time, when we looked for a critical point, that was where the gradient was zero. Okay? Now, making the gradient zero is too much to ask for. So instead of requiring the gradient to be a zero vector, we're going to require merely that the gradient is parallel or anti-parallel to the constraints, the constraint gradient. Okay? Now, people will often write this as a purely algebraic equation. They'll say that since you're parallel or anti-parallel, that means you must be some multiple. Right? Multiply this gradient by some single number. And this, traditionally, the symbol for it is lambda. Hey, that goes with Lagrange, right? Greek letter L. Okay. So the gradients point in the same or opposite directions. We'll see geometrically why this is reasonable, why this actually works. And, of course, we still need to satisfy the constraint. Right. Okay. And so let's remember without constraints what we did last time. Right? It's easier. We don't have to satisfy some function equals a constant. We just look for places where the gradient is the zero vector, right? The zx slope and the zy slope are both zero in the two-dimensional input case, right? Okay. So you have to relax this condition here because, for example, if you have, say, the distance function or its square be what you're trying to optimize here, distance to that point, the only place the gradient's going to be zero is at that point itself, but that doesn't meet your constraint. Right? Okay. Understand why anybody would actually care about the gradient's directions. Okay, so here's how we think about it. So I'm going to have, let's say, F can be in red, say, and F will be distance squared just because that's easier to take derivatives of. If we minimize the squared distance, we're going to minimize the distance, right? And if we maximize the squared distance, that'll be maximizing the distance, right? Because bigger numbers have bigger squares, smaller numbers have bigger squares. So if this point has the least squared distance, it has the least distance. And if this point has the greatest squared distance, it has the greatest distance. There's no worry about negative distances, of course. And, okay, so G will be just the equation for the ellipse. It's a function. Then its level curves will be ellipses, okay? And one of those level curves is our ellipse, right? Okay, and depending on how you set up the equation for G, you could either have the gradients of G pointing out or into the ellipse. I think usually when you set it up, they point out.
Okay.
So remember that with gradients, they're always perpendicular
to the level curves.
So that's from further back, right? Gradients are perpendicular to the level curves. I don't care about how long these arrows are. Right? So I'm just drawing some kind of arbitrary easy lengths for the arrows. I only really care about the direction here. Okay? Okay, so we have that point. All of these make right angles if I draw them right with the ellipse. Right? If you make little tangent lines at each of these points, the gradient is perpendicular to that line.
Okay? So we talked about that a few days ago.
What you can use that fact to find the tangent lines if you need them. Okay. Now what about the level curves of F? Okay. They're going to be circles. If you have all the points of a certain distance to our fixed point, that'll make a circle. So we're going to have a bunch of concentric rings here. Okay. Try and draw some circles centered about here. And the circles will get bigger. Right? I won't try and draw all of them. I could draw them over here as well. And the point is that if we draw the gradients for these circles, should have brought a compass as well. Not my best circle. The idea is that right here, where you're at the constrained optimum, the gradient of G, which is perpendicular to its level curve, a circle, points in the same direction. Gradient of F. Gradient of F,
which is perpendicular to that ring around the fixed point here,
is going to point in the same direction as the gradient of G. Because right here, when you get the circle that's just right, that kisses the ellipse right there, they have a common tangent line. So both of the gradients have to be perpendicular to that line. So they're either going to be in the same direction or the opposite direction.
In 3D, you end up with a situation of common tangent planes. And again, the gradients have to be perpendicular to that common plane. So they have to point in the same direction or the opposite direction.
So that's the geometric reasoning behind it. And then we have the same situation over here. We have the gradient of F, right? And we also have the gradient of G. So we should be able to find these two points now.
if we give some actual equations, right, we could actually find formulas. Okay. So let's make it into something with formulas. Okay, so find x comma y, minimizing what? The square distance, instead of distance, because that'll keep things easier for finding partial derivatives. So the square distance to say, we're going to say 2 comma 2 as the fixed point. I'll have a picture kind of like this, say. So the distance to 2 comma 2. So we're going to minimize x minus 2 squared plus y minus 2 squared. So that's going to be our, sometimes people call this the objective function, the thing you're trying to minimize or maximize. And we have the constraint, our ellipse. Let's see here. So we'll have g of xy, the x squared over 5 squared plus y squared over 3 squared, and that's going to equal 1. And that'll be the standard ellipse formula. And then we'll maximize after we find the minimum. We'll really be able to find them both using one procedure because we will find that there will be two constrained critical points, the two places where the gradients are, in this case, parallel. They could be anti-parallel. But in this case, I think they'll come out to be parallel. So we'll get two critical points, constrained critical points, on our ellipse. Okay. So let's see. We need some partial derivatives, right? Gradient of f is partial f partial x and partial f partial y. Okay. So anybody want to tell me the gradient of f? What's the x partial derivative of this thing? Two x minus 4. Right? You need a chain rule. Right? The squaring function, the outer function's derivative is the doubling function, and then the derivative of the inner function is just 1, so chain rule doesn't do anything. Okay, I guess, yeah, the chain rule isn't super interesting there. You do need to remember that we're doubling the x minus 2, not just x. Anyways, and then the y term, that's held constant. Right? Then we do this one. Okay, now we're holding x constant, so the x term contributes nothing to the y partial derivative. We use a chain rule and we get that. Okay. And okay, so this is the squared distance function's gradient. So those would be the red arrows in my picture. Now we need the green arrows. Okay, so let's see. Partial g partial x, partial g partial y. Okay. 2x over 25 plus nothing. And nothing plus 2y over 9. Okay. And so this is our little equation here. So we need to write that out. Now, these are vectors. So in this case, it's a two-dimensional problem, two-dimensional vectors. So this is really a system of two regular equations because it's one two-dimensional vector equation. Okay. So let's write this out here. On the one hand, we have 2x minus 4 is the x component of gradient f, and then that's going to equal some number lambda times the x component of the gradient of g, which is 2x over 25. And since we want the gradient of f to be some number lambda times the gradient of g, we also need the y component of the gradient of f, that's the 2y minus 4, to equal lambda times the y component of g, which is 2 ninths of y. So that says in components that says that the gradients are parallel or anti-parallel. Well, okay. It looks bad because we don't know what lambda is, we don't know what x is, we don't know what y is. That's three equations, or three variables, and only two equations there. But remember, we have a third equation. We have to be on the ellipse. So we do have three equations and three variables. So there is hope for actually solving this system. Okay. Three equations, three variables. All right. Questions or comments? All right, let's write these three equations. I think I can factor out a 2 there. So this is what we need to solve. Let me do. There's a number of approaches you could take. Let's say we go ahead and solve for x in terms of lambda and solve for y in terms of lambda. That's the only way it could be done. Okay, let's see if we can do it. Okay, so let's bring the 2 over to the other side. Let's get all the x stuff on the left side, put the 2 over here, and factor out the x. So 1 plus lambda over 25 equals 2. And y times 1 plus lambda over 9 equals 2. Okay. So x and y can be solved for because this is the formulas are relatively simple, so I didn't have to do anything really clever here. And then we can plug that into the top equation. And so we get
We have to square a bunch of stuff, right? Let's see. How much how painful will this be? So, 2 squared over 25. 1 plus lambda over 25 squared plus 2 squared over 9 squared equals 1.
Okay.
Let's see. That looks a little... Okay, at this point, I could, for example, I could use my the solve on the calculator would be one way. I have a solve command on my calculator, so I could figure that out. Although I don't think I should have to work that hard. I think it should be easier. So let me see. Yeah. That's how I did it. Let's see if we can do this without the calculator. So, one thing to observe here is that we don't really care about lambda. We want the x and y, right? We want to know where's the closest and furthest point. The lambda is just a tool, okay? So, how about we eliminate lambda, okay? So, we call the equations 1, 2, and 3, okay? So let's try a different approach. Let's take equations 2 and 3, and let's solve for lambda. The point here is that even if you get stuck with a nasty equation, you can at least estimate its solution. Okay. So don't despair, even if you end up with a hard equation. At least approximate the solutions. But I think, at least in this example, we can find a prettier way to do it. Okay, and we can get an exact formula. Okay, so solve for lambda here. Okay, so you have x minus 2 equals lambda times x over 25. Multiply by 25 over x. Okay. And over here, lambda is equal to 9... lambda times y over 9 is equal to y over 2. So multiply both sides by 9 over y. And then put that into... Well, okay, we can't do anything yet. Okay, so what is this bias? Well, if lambda is equal to both of these, then these are equal to each other. So now, lambda is gone. And I assumed here that x and y are not zero. In general, if you didn't have intuition about the problem, you'd have to check that. But it's pretty obvious geometrically here that x and y are not going to be zero in the solutions. All right. Let's see if this makes it any less bad. All right. I think. I thought there was going to be an easy way. Maybe I should have just gone with the solve command.
Because I'm still going to have a tricky system here.
I'll just go ahead and do the solve for lambda thing. So I'm going to go to my catalog, and for some reason I thought it was not going to be that bad, but all right. Calculator, I'll type an X instead of a lambda because that's faster, but I'm going to solve for lambda. Plug the solutions into our equations here. I guess I'll call them 4 and 5. And you should get the two furthest points, but this is taking longer than I thought. Okay. Let me show you hopefully an easier problem. The algebra is a little too hard on myself. Okay.
Sorry about that.
Okay. If I want a volume of 8 cubic units, could I minimize the surface area with an open top box? All right.
Okay.
So V will just be XYZ is 8. So this is our constraint. And then the surface area is what we're going to try and minimize. All right? So I'm thinking of a box like this. And as I said, it has an open top. You probably know that if it's a closed top, then by symmetry, the best thing you can do is make it a cube. But this is an open top, so there's going to be a bottom face of X, Y, and then the front and back faces would be Y times Z, so two of those, and then the left and right faces would be Z times X. that's would be in our notation earlier, the function f we're trying to optimize. Okay. Now there's three inputs now, but the method is the same.
Okay.
So we need to have derivatives here, partial derivatives.
Okay, so the x partial derivative of this guy, the surface area, is y plus nothing plus 2z. And that's got to equal lambda times the x partial derivative of our constraint. Okay? So this is partial f partial x, partial g partial x. And then here's the y component. We're going to have the y partial derivative of the surface area. So it'll be x plus 2z plus nothing equals lambda times the y partial derivative of this, which is xz. And then we take the z partial derivative of the surface area. So nothing plus 2y plus 2x. And then the z partial derivative of that is xy. So these are, this is a 3D vector equation, so I get three equations here. And I also have the constraint equation. So four equations, four variables. Now let's see if we can make some headway on this. Okay. We can use the constraint to eliminate a variable. So z is going to be, say, 8 over xy. And then put that in here, and you get y plus 16 over xy equals lambda times 8 over x and x. Possible. I think I see a little shortcut here. Okay, so for these guys, you can solve for lambda in three different ways. Okay, so if you solve the top equation for lambda, you just divide by y and z, and you get 1 over z plus 2 over y. From the top equation. And then from the second equation, if you solve for lambda, you get 1 over z plus 2 over x. And from the third equation, you solve for lambda, and you get 2 over x plus 2 over y. Yes. Yeah, see, I did, like, for example, the third equation here, divide both sides by xy. So 2y divided by xy is 2 over x. 2x divided by xy is 2 over y. So I just solve for lambda three times. And all the solutions have to be the same. Right? Because lambda is supposed to be a number, right? It satisfies all three equations at the same time. Now let's see if I can take advantage of this here. Let's see. Now, for example, we could subtract off
say? Say you want to eliminate z here, right? Take the middle two things here, right? 1 over z plus 2 over y equals 1 over z plus 2 over x, right? How can these two terms possibly be the same thing? The only way they could be the same thing is if x equals y. Okay.
Because everything else in the in those two sides of the equation are the same. Okay. So the x and the y have to be the same. You could subtract the 1 over z's. You could divide by 2. And then you could take reciprocals. You'd have y equals x at the end. Right? So x and y have to be the same thing. And that matches our geometric intuition. We should have a square base for this box, right? There's an asymmetry between x, y, and z because we have an open top. But we don't care about the difference between front and back versus left and right here. Right? X and y are treated the same. So the optimal solution should have that symmetry of x equals y.
What else?
Can we be clever here?
Okay. Let's do the same trick over here. 2 over x on both sides, and then here we have 1 over z and a 2 over y. So 1 over z has to equal 2 over y. We can cross multiply or whatever, right? Solve this and make it simpler. Y has to be 2z.
Okay. Maybe there's another one.
What about the first one and the third one here? Let's see, 2 over y and 2 over y on both sides, 1 over z here, and 2 over x there.
So 1 over z has to be 2 over x. So that would say x has to be 2z. But I guess we kind of knew that already, right? If y is 2z and x is y, then x is 2z. So I guess that was redundant. Okay. So I guess we can plug everything in now, right? Plug into what?
Plug into the constraint. I don't think we even need that. That form is not really going to help us. This is better, right? Okay. So 8 is the volume, and it has to equal x, which is 2z, and times y, which is 2z, times z. Which is 4z cubed.
Okay, so we use the constraint, and so z will be the cube root of 2, I believe, and then x and y are each twice z.
From our earlier work, so we get twice the cube root of 2.
So that's an easier one, although I admit I had to make a reasonable choice as to how to go about solving it. My choice was to eliminate lambda, and in this case it resulted in some radical simplification. Now, you're not always so lucky in general. You can eliminate lambda, and you still might get something kind of messy.
Yeah.
I did get some solutions on my calculator for the first one.
I think it was one value was about negative 2.3-ish, and then the other value was about negative 3. Negative 35. Positive.
Yeah. Unless I made a little arithmetic error there. Yeah, they really should come out positive, and I see it, right? Sign error there. Okay. I knew from the picture that the gradients were supposed to be parallel, not anti-parallel, so I knew those negative solutions my calculator is giving me were total red flags. Okay. So I guess one of these had, death by algebra. The other one was not so bad. All right. Let's see. Here, I'll make this one optional. You can do it if you find it's interesting enough. But I'll warn you, it's a little more challenging.
find the points on the sphere that are closest to and farthest from the line given by this formula.
That one's harder because you have to find a formula, say, for the squared distance to a line. You can do that if you use some stuff from chapter 2. Projections and things like that. You need a perpendicular part of some vector. But just getting a formula for what you're trying to optimize is not easy here. So I won't force you to do this one if you're interested. This one, yeah, you should be able to do that one. And, yeah. I really think it should be easier than the ellipse one. If it's not, I guess have your calculator bail you out, right? I got my solutions on the calculator here. They're much more reasonable. About positive 35 and or positive 2.3. Those are the two solutions we'd plug in to get the 2 points. Okay. Have a nice spring break. Thank you.